ते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
This evening we're speaking on the subject of Krishna consciousness and the cyclic succession or the parampara. We're reading from the Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, text numbers 1 through 3. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavanaham Avyayam Vivasan Manave Praha Manur Ikshvakave Brivit. Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivasan, and Vivasan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshaku. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Herein we find the history of the Bhagavad Gita traced from a remote time when it was delivered to the royal order of all planets, beginning from the sun planet. The kings of all planets are especially meant for the protection of the inhabitants, and therefore the royal order should understand the science of Bhagavad Gita in order to be able to rule the citizens and protect them from material bondage to lust. Human life is meant for the cultivation of spiritual knowledge in eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the executive heads of all states and all planets are obliged to impart this lesson to the citizens by education, culture, and devotion. In other words, the executive heads of all states are intended to spread the science of Krishna consciousness so that people may take advantage of this great science and pursue a successful path utilizing the opportunity of the human form of life. So we're born into this world in a condition of darkness. When we come out of the womb, virtually, we know nothing. We've forgotten everything of our past birth, and we rely totally upon whatever knowledge we receive from our parents or from our teachers, etc., as well as what we can glean through our senses. Generally, in the modern age, we acquire knowledge by what is known as the empirical process, or in Sanskrit it is called aroha. It means ascending. I will use my senses, my eyes, my ears, my nose, my tongue, my tactile sense, and I will extend them by microscope and telescope, etc. I will examine the material world, I will make observation and conclusion. But this process is found to be defective by many great scholars and philosophers who follow the path of Vedic knowledge. First of all of us make mistakes. Our senses are imperfect, and we make decisions, and we make mistakes. Even the biggest, so-called biggest people in society make big mistakes. We make small mistakes, they make big mistakes. Just like Bill Clinton. You know, he practically American for the last year. They've been totally preoccupied because Bill Clinton made some foolish mistakes. Mahatma Gandhi, very intelligent man, he was warned not to go to the gathering, the kirtan. There was news that someone would shoot him. But foolishly he ignored the warning, thinking that he knew better, and he was killed. Similarly, President Kennedy, or anywhere you go, practically all over the world, we see that so-called superior people, their senses are just as limited and imperfect as even the common man. So whatever knowledge we can acquire through the senses is necessarily bound to be tainted with the same imperfect senses. The knowledge is bound to be somewhat defective. Now, the process by which we are understanding Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literature is known as Avaroha Pantha. Not Aroha, but Avaroha, which means descending knowledge. In other words, the premise is that, or the philosophy is, or the teaching is, that God Himself, who is the perfect knower, Sa sarva vid bhajate mam sarva bhavena bharata. He is sarva vid. He knows everything. Why? Because this is his energy. Everything is his energy. Everything is his creation. Everything emanates from him. And therefore he has perfect knowledge of his own creation. There is nothing out of his perception. His eyes and ears are everywhere. So he makes an effort to reveal to us. Now how does he do that? Here it is explained that through this parampara or disciplic succession, and Prabhupada makes the point in the purport that leaders of society, especially in former times, this planet was ruled by saintly kings. Now, democracy, we're all attached to democracy, but frankly, if you examine the limitations of democracy, our Srila Prabhupada used to say demon-crazy democracy, because the first law of political science is that the mass of people are less intelligent. It's not that the mass of people are more intelligent, the mass of people are less intelligent. But you give everybody equal vote, and then you have politicians who know how to play upon the sentiments, just like Mr. Bill Clinton. He wants the support of the public. He's in a very dangerous situation where he could be removed from office, the first in history of the United States. He could become, and he'll go down in history. So he wants pressure put upon the senators in the Congress that they should not vote against him. So at the same time as his trial was going on, he delivered what is known as the State of the Union Address. And it was a very nice speech, expertly delivered, and making all kinds of promises to the people about what he was going to do. And politicians are expert at this. In order to get your vote at the time of elections, they will make all kinds of promises. And foolish, naive people, especially they're susceptible to anyone who will promise them increased sense gratification. If I were to promise that all schools would have Pepsi in all the fountains, in all the schools in Bombay, I would immediately become very popular and I would get the votes of all the students. Like that, the leaders of society promise all kinds of facilities, which they may, but most likely may not be able to keep. So here we have the mass of people who are less intelligent. They get swayed by their senses. We have the politicians who take money from so many people, and they'll do anything to get elected. But they know in 4 more years there's going to be another election. They have to pay off all the people who supported them for getting favors, whether it's this union or this interest group or whoever it is. They lobby. Tremendous amount of lobbying goes on in democracy to get votes, and they promise everybody everything under the sun. They buy all kinds of votes. So when they get elected, they've got to get all that money back. So again, they sell licenses, they sell contracts, and so many illegal things they do. And they know that in 4 more years, the election is coming, so they do not what is good for the people, but whatever is necessary to keep themselves in office. And invariably, more or less, most of them are motivated by putting money into their own pockets so that when they retire, they can have a good facility. So, the actual Vedic system where you had a king who was trained from his childhood, not that he was an actor or a cricket player or something like that, and now he's turned politician. No, the king was trained from childhood in all the arts of not only politics and etc., niti, but also he was trained how to please the people, how to work for the people, what was best for the people. And he didn't have to worry about money because he had his own treasury. He had enough luxury to keep him perfectly satisfied. So here Prabhupada is making the point that such kings, it was their primary duty to lead people on the path of righteousness or self-realization, because janma labha parat pungsang ante narayana smriti. What is the most important thing in our lives? At the time of death, how many of us are going to wish that we could have spent more time at the office, or more time studying for our exams, or that we could have spent more time at the cricket club, or, you know. At the time of death, the only thing that's going to be really important to you is what kind of awareness you have of life and death, what kind of consciousness, level of consciousness you have developed. Now we can see that there are different levels of consciousness within different species. You go from plant life to aquatic life to all types of insect life, animal life. There are different levels of consciousness. Trees or plants actually are conscious, very minute consciousness, but there is consciousness there. And this was proven scientifically by Jagadish Chandra Bose. He did experiments showing that plants grow or don't grow according to different kinds of music that you play for them. And he did it in a very scientific way, and he showed that the consciousness is there, although covered over. Animals also have consciousness. They are aware. I was with one on the train coming back from Calcutta. And there was one family just opposite us, and one young lady, must have been all of 13 or 14, she had a little puppy dog. And she was smothering that puppy with her love. But when it came time for lunch, she greedily gobbled down chicken every time. So I asked her that, you love your puppy, don't you love the chicken also? And, you know, she said, well, no, my puppy is cute, but chickens aren't cute. So the next time the pantry man came around asking about meals, I said, do you have any dog meat? I'd like to eat dog. He got a little shocked. He didn't know what I was talking about. the girl and her family looked at me very strange. I can never understand how people can go on a campaign to save the whales but don't mind eating hamburgers. It eludes me where their intelligence is coming from. The reason we're attracted to animals is not because of their bodies. It's because they have some consciousness. They have feeling. They have emotions. They're covered over. They're not as evolved. Now, the human form of life is the most highly evolved state of consciousness. It's the most awakened. And it is the only opportunity that we have to transcend the physical plane and transcend to the spiritual or conscious plane, completely, fully conscious plane, where everything is consciousness, everything is conscious. So, Ante Narayana Smriti, Ante, at the end, it is most important that everyone, regardless of their background, be able to somehow focus their mind on God. And it's the duty of the leaders to do that. If they don't do that, then they're simply blind men. And they're not leaders, they're blind men. They don't know the purpose of life, and they can't lead their followers. I'll carry on. In this millennium, the sun god is known as Vivasvan, the king of the sun, which is the origin of all planets within the solar system. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated, Yachakshuresha Savita Sakala Grahanam Raja Samasta Suramurti Rashesha Teja Yasya Gaya Brahmati Samrita Kala Chakra Govindamadi Purusham Tamam Bhajami. Let me worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, Krishna, who is the original person, and under whose order the sun, which is the king of all planets, is assuming immense power and heat. The sun represents the eye of the Lord and traverses its order in obedience to his order. The sun is the king of the planets, and the sun god, at present of the name Vivasvan, rules the sun planet, which is controlling all other planets by supplying heat and light. He is rotating under the order of Krishna, and Lord Krishna originally made Vivasvan his first disciple to understand the science of Bhagavad Gita. So as I said, the Absolute Truth makes an effort to reveal himself to us. If I want to see Bajpai, not easy. If Bajpai wants to come to Hare Krishna land and have a meeting with me, not difficult. For me to meet him, he's a very big, powerful man. I'm a small fellow. He can easily come and see me if he wants to. If God wants to reveal himself to us, it is not a problem for him. And he is making an effort to do that by instructing, first of all, Vivasvan. Here it is explained. The Gita is not therefore a speculative treatise for the insignificant mundane scholar, but is a standard book of knowledge coming down from time immemorial. And this is the point, that since the beginning of creation, transcendental knowledge has existed. It was born along with the creation. And it is available for anyone who makes an effort to search it out through the proper means. We would like to know who we are, what is the purpose of our existence, what happens after death. I'm sure that beneath the surface, after asking all about roti, kapra, or makan, one of the most important questions is, who am I? It may be just below the surface because we're not getting answers. Therefore, we tend to put it on the back burner of the stove because we're not getting answers. But any intelligent person who is a little introspective, who's got some gray matter up here, something to work with, he's naturally going to wonder, what is the purpose of my life? So God is making an effort to be known, and the Bhagavad Gita is the science of God or the song of God, and that knowledge is coming down to us through disciplic succession or parampara. In the Mahabharata, Shantiparva, we can trace out the history of the Gita as follows. In the beginning of the millennium, known as Treta Yuga, the science of the relationship with the Supreme was delivered by Vivaswanta to Manu. Manu, being the father of mankind, gave it to his son, Maharaj Ikshaku, the king of this earth planet, and the forefather of the Raghu dynasty in which Lord Ramchandra appeared. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita existed in human society from the time of Maharaj Ikshaku. So it goes into a description of a time scale. I'm not going to go into that now. Since the Vedic instructions are accepted, well, here we are. Because the Bhagavad Gita is as good as the Vedas, being spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this knowledge is apurusheya, or superhuman. Apurusheya means that it's not subject to the four defects, which we discussed earlier, imperfect senses, tendency to be an illusion, tendency to make mistakes, and cheating propensity. So apurusheya means that the knowledge of the Gita, because it is spoken by the Lord, it is perfect knowledge. It's not something that has to be researched or changed or adjusted. It is already perfect knowledge. It is our business to realize it. It is our business to acquire the basic knowledge and then by study to go deeper and deeper into its context. For example, the Bhagavad Gita is sometimes called an open secret. It is called rahasya, which means secret, confidential. So Krishna says to Arjuna, tattu te guyatamam pravakshami anasuyave. Guya also means it is very confidential knowledge. He says, I am instructing this confidential knowledge to you, Arjuna, because you are not envious, because you are my bhakta. Bhaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam yetad uttamam. It is the most elevated confidential knowledge about the nature of the soul, the spirit, the self, and the nature of the soul's relationship with the oversoul, the supreme soul. So it's therefore very important knowledge. And here it is explained that this knowledge is coming to us in the Bhagavad Gita through disciplic succession. Since Vedic instructions are accepted as they are without human interpretation, the Gita must therefore be accepted without mundane interpretation. The mundane wranglers may speculate on the Gita in their own ways, but that is not Bhagavad Gita yatha rup as it is. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita has to be accepted as it is from disciplic succession, and it is described here in that the Lord spoke to the Sun God, the Sun God spoke to Manu, and Manu spoke to his son Ikshaku. So our tendency is that in a group, in a gathering, say a party, if you tell a story to someone and it's a good story, so you're talking with them, and then you wander away from them, you're talking to someone else, and they tell that story to someone else. And they like it, and they tell it to someone else, and it goes around the whole party, the group, the gathering. By the time it gets back to you, it's a totally different story. Because people add something, subtract something, add their own interpretation of it, and invariably the essence is often lost. So this is not the way to receive already perfect knowledge. There is no need for addition or subtraction. Frankly, we should realize that throughout time, there's nothing new there's nothing new under the sun. The absolute truth was the absolute truth, is the absolute truth, and will be the absolute truth. Therefore, it is knowledge. Knowledge which is constantly changing and evolving is not actually truth. Whatever you know today to be true, I'll give you an example. When I was going to school, long time ago, 25 years ago. No, 30 years ago. 30 years ago. No, actually, this school was in high school, say 40 years ago. One of my favorite subjects was social studies, because we were learning about Roman history and ancient history, and I was really absorbed in it. But we learned about prehistoric man, and we learned about the Neanderthal man, the Piltdown man, the Cro-Magnon man, etc., etc. That was in grade 7. In grade 8, I was very surprised to see that the Piltdown man was missing from the textbook. Anybody know why he was missing? Why was the Piltdown man missing? You don't know? You never heard of the Piltdown man? Huh? How many have heard of the Piltdown man? You didn't study prehistoric in school? You don't study prehistoric history, huh? Anyway, what had happened was that someone in Piltdown, England, who the man was named after, had made his own limestone fossil. You notice fossil?
Yeah.
Okay. He'd made a limestone, he'd buried it in his own backyard and discovered it in the whole scientific world. He discovered one of the missing links to Mr. Darwin's theory, the Piltdown man. What I understood in grade 7 turned out to be not true in grade 8. Then when I got into college, again, the same thing happened. I heard about a system that they use for dating things. Everything is composed basically of carbon. Everything in the world is a high degree of carbon in everything. Other elements also, but carbon is. So they have something called the carbon 14 isotope, which is an isotope of carbon which it breaks down. So there's a half-life, what's known as a half-life. In other words, you can study something, the age of something, by, in comparing it with carbon 14, you can compare it by seeing the rate that carbon 14 breaks down to its half-life. Means it's already gone through half its life, and you can understand that if you've seen it for 25 years up to a certain point, then it'll finish its life in a certain period of time. Not necessarily another 25 years, it may be a ratio. It's a ratio, the half-life. So you can study things and see the rate of breakdown of carbon in that thing, and you can determine how old it is. It's 1 million years, 2 million years. And this is the way I would study fossils and cultures, etc. But they had made a mistake in their calculations. And carbon-14 proved to be an imperfect dating tool, and they had to revise all their calculations. But everything that people thought to be true was proven to be false. So this is not knowledge. It is simply speculation. Knowledge is true always. It doesn't need interpretation. And that is the knowledge revealed in the Bhagavad Gita. Verse 2. Evam parampara praptam imam rajasayo vidu sa kalineya mahatta yoga nashta parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession. And the saintly kings understood it in that way, but in the course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demoniac persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit, and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators, there arose a need to reestablish the disciplic succession. So, people have this thing. It's called ego, false ego. Basically, in this world, we all want to establish our ego, our upadhi, our importance, our prestige. And in order to do that, we are prepared to even take something great and use it to make it appear that our prowess is manifested, that our greatness. Therefore, you will find people who love to take the scripture, especially Bhagavad Gita is a classic example. There have been so many people interpret the Bhagavad Gita without at all mentioning Krishna, who's the speaker of Bhagavad Gita, without giving any credit to him. They fashion their own ideas, complete speculation. It's not there in the Gita. It's not mentioned at all. But they completely concoct. Like one idea is, in one verse, Krishna is talking to Arjuna, he's preaching to Arjuna, "Arjuna, surrender to me." So one man, who is actually the president of India, he's interpreting. Actually, the word Krishna means black. And black, when you think of black, it's dark, darkness. Like at night, it's dark, black. And the darkness signifies unknown. When you think of the darkness, you can't see very well, you don't know how to proceed unless you have a light. It's the unknown. So Krishna's not telling Arjuna to surrender to him personally. He's telling Arjuna to surrender to the deep, dark unknown that is within all of us. A total concoction. Not there in the verse. But it sounds cute. Just like the girl with her dog. Her dog was cute. And, you know, this man wants to establish his ego. Oh, what a nice interpretation he has made of the Bhagavad Gita. Very titillating to the mind. Very nice interpretation. Has nothing to do with the actual message that Krishna wanted to convey, but he gets some reputation as a great speaker on Gita. If he just repeated Krishna's words, it's like Munis. A Muni means a scholar of sorts who's always speculating on the truth. So one Muni has got to give a different theory than the past Muni. If he just repeats what the previous Muni said, he won't become very prominent. So he's got to invent something, add something new, a new twist. So this is what happens with the scripture. And therefore you'll find so many interpretations and commentaries with different ideas, but hardly one of them can induce people to actually achieve the goal of Bhagavad Gita, and that is sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja, to surrender to God. Because they change the whole thing. It's like there's someone, and some man, his wife sent him to the marketplace to buy a chicken. Same family, I don't know. Anyway, he was sent to the market to buy a chicken, and he was a Muni. So when he got to the marketplace, there were people selling their chickens, chicken hawkers. And they all wanted to make a sale, so they were all screaming out, "No, buy my chickens, my chickens are the best, my chickens have the most fat, my chickens are, they have the most fat, buy my chicken." So the man thought, fat, that's the real quality of a good chicken. So I won't buy a chicken, I'll go to the fat market and just buy fat. And then he got to the fat market and all the hawkers were saying, "Buy my fat is as smooth as oil." Oil, that's the good quality of fat. So he went to the oil market and all the oil people were saying, "Buy my oil is as clear as water." So he took his wife a bucket of water and she poured it on his head. And they didn't have dinner that night. So the point is that you can speculate on the message of Bhagavad Gita, but you miss the whole point. You won't get knowledge. The only way you're going to get knowledge is if you receive it from someone who received it from someone and is not changing it, is not interpreting it. That is called parampara. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord himself that the disciplic succession was broken. Now, just see the importance here of disciplic succession. If the succession gets broken by time or corruption or something, then the message, the actual message is lost. And Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata bhutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijanyam. When the message is lost, I come myself. He says here, sakkale nea mahatta yoga nashta parantapa. Because the science was broken, nashta, therefore at that time I have to come, and I've come to re-establish it. In the course of time, it's bound to happen. It's inevitable. The material world deteriorates everything. Our bodies are being destroyed. Our whole civilization is being destroyed by time. Everything is deteriorating. Knowledge is deteriorating. Everything. The character of men is deteriorating. Things that people would not have thought of 100 years ago, men take casually today. You'll be surprised to know that in the last 100 years, the amount of wars on this planet has increased more than tenfold in the last 10 years. And in the last 3 years, it has again increased tenfold. People, and these are not ordinary wars where Kshatriyas go out and fight with each other. These are wars where women are raped and butchered, where children are slaughtered mercilessly, where people are gassed and bombed, and it is horrendous. It is the most inconceivable inhumanity, man's own inhumanity to his fellow man. Inconceivable what is happening. In the course of time, things get corrupted, and even the message of the Gita gets lost, and it was lost 5,000 years ago. Therefore, Krishna came and he repeated it to Arjuna. He repeated the message to Arjuna. It was taken up. It was heard by Sanjaya. It was recorded by Vyasadeva. And in that way, different lines of disciplic succession were started. Again, the message was purified. So, actually, let's see. Okay, I'm not going to read the third verse. But again, here's the point, that in order to understand the most confidential and important knowledge that deals with our happiness, that deals with our lives, that deals with our very being, we have to apply principles and techniques which we're not taught today. If you want to take the medicine of the Bhagavad Gita, you have to take the medicine according to the instructions written on the label. You cannot take a bottle of medicine, no matter how efficacious the medicine may be, and just concoct. It says take 2 tablets 3 times daily. So you think, nah, I'll just take 1 tablet every 6 months. And then you complain that it doesn't work. No, you have to take it according to the instruction. And here we're instructed that we should hear the message of the Bhagavad Gita. It will clear up all the cobwebs in our mind. It will clear up all the confusion in our hearts. It will fill us full of joy and happiness. We will come to know about the absolute truth and our personal loving relationship with Him. But we have to follow the process of accepting knowledge through disciplic succession. And we should reject, we should learn the gold test. If you go to the marketplace and you want to buy gold, the next millennium is coming up, and some people say that there'll be a huge international stock market crisis and financial crisis, and you better put your money in gold, because banks may not be able to keep your money. There's some people who are talking like that. There's reason to believe that there'll be problems. Computers will crash. So, okay, you go rushing off to the market. And at that time, there's going to be a lot of people wanting to take advantage of people who want to buy gold. So they'll sell them yellow metal. But if you don't know, there's a simple test, how to test for gold. You know, you scratch it. You take a knife and scratch it and see whether it's actually gold or fool's gold. There are other tests also. You can test the density of it. You can... various other things. So in the same way, if you want to truly get spiritual knowledge, then you should make sure that you connect yourself with a source of knowledge which is coming down through the cyclic succession, from teacher to student, teacher to student, just as we heard Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavan Avyayam Manu Rikshakave Bravit Vivasan Munave Praha Manu Rikshakave Bravit. Krishna said it came down from Surya Vivaswan to Manu to Ikshvaku, and this way it came down. Similarly, in the modern age, this knowledge is coming down through the cyclic succession. You wouldn't go to a doctor who hadn't been to a regular college and received a degree. If you wanted to get an operation, you would go to a doctor who had all the right qualifications. If he's just got a signed doctor on his door and his prices happen to be a little cheaper than the one at the hospital, watch out, you may be meeting a quack doctor, a cheater doctor. There are many people, like abortions. There are many people out there who take advantage of very stupid and foolish women who want to get an abortion. And, you know, they go to such doctor, and he really isn't a surgeon at all, but, you know, in and out in 4 hours, and actually, you know, you end up bleeding on the floor, dead. Anyway, I won't say more about that. But the point is, you wouldn't go to a doctor to get a serious operation unless you knew he was at least a bona fide doctor, if not the best doctor that you could get. So, the same thing. Why trust your spiritual life in the hands of someone who's simply a fancy speaker, who's simply a kathankar, who's simply motivated in putting forward his own theories? It is not Krishna that you have to surrender to. It's the deep, dark unknown within all of us. It may sound cute, but is it according to parampara? And I can tell you right now in Juhu, there's one gentleman who's attracting quite a good crowd of people. And he's quite an attractive person, I'm told. And their show is quite good. They put on, in the West, we go to, you know, Michael Jackson concerts or Rolling Stones concerts. In India, people go to kathankars. It's the same, you know, entertainment scene. The guy who puts on the best show, he gets the biggest crowd. And there's competition and there's prestige and everything involved. But if you want spiritual knowledge, you should not be looking for that. You should be looking for credentials. You should be looking who is presenting the knowledge as it is, according to Krishna's original instructions. Then and only then can you hope to get the real thing. So, we'll finish there. Are there any questions?